Welcome to another edition of Through Science to Health. This is Chris Bricker, and every month we've been bringing you not only discussion and updates surrounding the pandemic, but also some of the insights and discoveries emerging from it. Our guest today is Dr. Allison Berry, Clallam and Jefferson County's health officer. Dr. Berry has earned her Doctor of Medicine degree from Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. She has a Master of Public Health, an MPH, in Epidemiology and Biostatistics, and she earned a Bachelor's in Biochemistry and Music. One would be hard-pressed to find a more passionate and dedicated champion of public health. And in our flurries of focus over the past few years, often we've forgotten to talk about importance of public health in general and about the many programs and services that public health provides for our citizens and in the name of the common good. Dr. Allison Berry, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, public health has a broad umbrella beyond COVID-19, but in the time we have today, why don't we start with a general overview, and then let's talk about some specific programs that you'd particularly like to highlight during the time we have together today.
Sure. So public health has been around for quite some time, and we've been working to protect the health of the public generally since long before COVID and continued through the COVID pandemic. But I think for many folks, they didn't really know we were here until COVID happened. And so I think it's a good chance to talk about kind of what public health is and what we do beyond COVID-19. Generally in public health, we focus on community level interventions that will make all of us healthier. And particularly we focus on preventing disease as much as we can. The healthcare system tends to focus primarily on treating disease, but at the public health level, we do our best to try to make those diseases never happen for as many of us as possible. And particularly look at how we can work to protect the most vulnerable in society. And that's really where we focus a lot of our intervention.
You know, that whole idea of preventive medicine and, you know, just trying to make sure that people are taking care of themselves before they have to go get diagnosed with something at a medical facility, for example, or a clinic.
Sure. And we try to do a lot around education so people know what they can do to keep themselves healthy and look at what we can do on a systems level so that it's not so hard to keep yourself healthy. And what can we change from a policy perspective so that it's easier to go for a walk? It's hard to walk if you don't have sidewalks that you can walk on. How do we make sure you have access to healthy food, clean water, clean air, all these key components of us living healthy lives that are really beyond the control of the individual. And so from a public health perspective, we really try to advocate for policy and to really put in place interventions to make it easier to live a healthy life.
Now, I know, Allison, you have a couple of programs that you'd like to talk about in detail. And what would be the first one that you want to emphasize?
Sure. So I think a lot of times we talk a bit about the communicable disease aspect in COVID-19, so preventing COVID-19 outbreaks. And we work on all communicable diseases in the health department, so tuberculosis, measles, and the like. But we also have a really invested environmental health program. We work to make sure that the water's clean and that the shellfish are safe. We work to make sure that when you recycle something, it actually gets recycled and used. And we have an extensive water quality and solid waste program there too. And so I just always want to make sure we acknowledge our environmental health folks who work to make sure that we all have access to a clean environment. But particularly one of the areas that we do a lot of work in our office is on maternal child health. So particularly focusing on that really critical time during pregnancy and in those early years of a child's life to make sure that that new family has access to everything they need to keep that one of our most vulnerable citizens by definition healthy. So one of the programs we run is the WIC program, or the Women's Infants Children program, to provide nutrition to families, particularly low-income families. And you become eligible for that program as soon as you become pregnant if you meet the income threshold. So if you have any question about whether or not you might be eligible, definitely give us a call at the Public Health Department. We want to make sure that those new lives start off well. We also know that being a new parent is an incredibly stressful and difficult time, and also a really critical time for the health of that child. And so we have a lot of programs to support new families. We've got a nurse home visiting program where we'll actually send nurses out to your house to meet with you to help support you in those early years. We also have breastfeeding peer counselors that will help folks. So breastfeeding is tricky and also really important for the health of children. And so we want to make sure that new parents have everything they need to succeed there. We also try to make sure that we always use the term new parents to make sure that this is fully welcoming and acceptable to all parents, however they identify. And we really try to make sure that that is the reality in our space.
You know, Allison, as a parent yourself, I think you have a dear interest in this program. And I'm curious, what does it take structurally to staff a program like this?
Well, it's certainly, I think we could always use more staff for what we do. But primarily, our staff are nurses or community health workers. Our breastfeeding peer counselor program is actually for particularly staffed by folks who have been through the program before, so experienced parents themselves who have navigated this particularly challenging time, who can really kind of empathize with folks in that position. We are open to any new parents, regardless of income status. And then we also, because we don't have infinite staff, try to focus a lot of our work for supporting parents who are at high risk. So parents dealing with addiction, parents dealing with homelessness, parents who are, for whatever reason, in a challenging circumstance and needing support. We know that those first few years are so critical to the future health and success of children. And they're also years where we can make a big difference, and we can help parents make that big difference. So, you know, even if you have high risk for adverse childhood experiences, if you're living outside or if you've been exposed to addiction, one single stable adult can make a huge difference in how well that child does for the rest of their lives. And so we really focus on empowerment and supporting parents to help them be that one stable adult in their kid's life, or more than one if they have access to that. It's one of the places where we really see some of the most benefit. We see, you know, kids and families who move on to have much more successful lives than they were on track to have before. One of the other big parts of that program is that we offer safe sleep education, which is a passion of mine. In Clallam County, unfortunately, we have had one of the highest infant mortality rates in the state. And when we really dug into the data, one of the things that we found there is that one of the big drivers of that was unsafe sleep, kids sleeping in unsafe ways. And that's a really preventable problem that we can change. And so we really focus on education around that and helping families figure out how to keep their kiddos safe at night. And the keys there is a kiddo should be alone, on their back on a firm sleep surface with nothing else around them. And if we do those three things, that makes the biggest difference about keeping these young citizens alive. So we've been focusing on that program in Clow, and we've been bringing that more into Jefferson as well. And we're hoping that that will help reduce those numbers of completely unnecessary deaths of small children and support families in this really challenging but also really meaningful time.
Remind our listeners that we're talking with Dr. Allison Berry, and she's the Clallam and Jefferson County's health officer. You know, when you talked about getting parents on track, or getting adults on track to cope with their lives, but not only cope with their lives, but also to be better parents, there are a lot of extenuating factors that go to make up, how people can get their stuff together, get themselves together and functioning, and learning about some of these things, whether it would be the WIC program or the Safe Sleep campaign, all of these things to really ensure the safety and the security of the kids that are growing up into this world.
it's really important work for us, and we're excited to be able to provide that support. And one of the other areas where we are doing a lot of work, have been doing a lot of work and hope to expand our work, is in the area of harm reduction. And harm reduction, I think, is a term that is not super well understood often in the public. I think the place where people hear it the most is around substance use disorder. But in truth, harm reduction is really the understanding that people will make choices that may not be the absolute healthiest, regardless of what we recommend. And so it's not actually just in substance use disorder. It's something we practice in really every aspect of society. So I think of the fact that, you know, when you drive down the road, we really wish that everyone would drive slowly and well. But we know that that's not always how that goes. And so we put in barriers on the side of the road to make sure that you don't fly off it if you're going too fast. Because we acknowledge that even with our best of intentions, some folks aren't gonna do the very best practice. And in medicine, I'm a primary care doctor. You know, I certainly wish all my patients, you know, ate well and exercised and did all the things I asked them to do. But most people don't. And so acknowledging that, how do we support our patients where they are and help them live the healthiest life they can? And so when it comes to things like substance use disorder, what we're doing there is acknowledging that, yes, of course, we would prefer that people not use drugs or use substances in unhealthy ways. But knowing that people do, how can we meet them where they are and support them, keep them alive, help them live meaningful lives, and help them move on to that path to recovery whenever they are ready?
There's some controversy out there with that. But I think we're hearing more and more the phrase harm reduction, and we're hearing more and more about needle exchanges and syringe services and teaching about safer use practices and all the rest of that stuff. And some of the blowback, I think, is saying, well, aren't we being enablers? But sure. It's not really the case, is it? It's something more than
that. Yeah, I think that's a really common pushback that, you know, if we're, for instance, you know, why would you have a syringe service program? Aren't you just encouraging people to use drugs? And to that, I always say, you know, the thing that makes people use drugs isn't the needle. No one wakes up wanting to poke themselves with a needle in the morning. It's the drug. And so offering people safe syringes does not increase their use of drugs. What it does do is help them do so more safely and not pick up infectious diseases in the process. And the other really key is that offering those kind of services gets folks in the door so that we can develop that kind of relationship with them, build that trusting relationship, and help them access the other things they need, help them access social services, teach them about naloxone, make sure they have some, and also maintain that relationship so that when they're ready, we can get them into treatment. So a lot of really what we do in our harm reduction programs is we just build relationships with people who are in a bad position in their life. And the more that folks know us, the more that they come in, the more they're willing to ask once they're ready to get sober. And that's really what we do with those programs, is we care about people, we treat them like human beings, we keep them alive until they're ready to get sober and get better. And when they are, we make sure they have access to that treatment right away. And we also just make sure they have access to all the other services they need. We find out if they're, for instance, pregnant and make sure that they have access to the services they need around that so that they can have a healthy pregnancy. So
I think
the syringes get them in the door, but they're not the goal.
Right.
It's really everything else we bring.
I think it's important to realize that people don't choose addiction as a lifestyle.
Oh, goodness, no. Yeah, I don't know anyone who, you know, graduated from high school and said, my goal in life is to get addicted to heroin.
Right.
It's not how any of us planned on our life going. There's a lot of different ways people get there. One of the more common ones is trauma. So I actually have treated folks for addiction myself in my primary care practice. And one of the most common things I see is, you know, history of assault, history of abuse, or that people get addicted because they had serious chronic pain that was mismanaged in the past. They were given narcotics when they should have been given other things. And then they kind of spiral further and further until they end up in injectables. I've also seen a lot of folks who had underlying mental health disorders that just weren't adequately treated. I had one gentleman who saw me for anxiety, and I got him on proper normal anxiety medications, the kind of things that you could get in a primary care office. And then he didn't need drugs anymore. But he was self-treating because he had better access to heroin than he did to good primary care. And so that's where we can make a big difference in reducing people's moves to addiction generally. People don't plan on getting addicted to drugs. It's not a pleasant life. And so what we try to do is meet people there when they're in that usually worst part of their life and help them get out of it.
You know, Allison, there's another observation I heard from a commentator recently that if we make it easier and cheaper to access treatment than to use, then there are really positive benefits to providing a program like this.
Oh, absolutely. So I used to work at the Jamestown Family Health Center where we provided MAT services or medically assisted treatment. And I had people who would travel all the way from Nia Bay to see me, which is a 2.5-hour drive. And they could go down the block to get heroin. But they were really making that 2.5-hour drive when that, you know, once a week to see me because they wanted to get sober. And we need to make it easier to get sober than it is to get heroin. I think the more that we can do that, the better outcomes we're going to find. And we see that in everything. You know, if it's easier to buy sugary cereal than it is to provide to get, you know, fruit for your kids, you're going to get sugary cereal. So the more that we can change those defaults so that the healthier option is available and easily accessible, the more people will do it.
And the benefits of the Safe Needle Program, especially as it relates to infectious diseases, is extremely important.
Yes. So we see dramatic reductions in infectious diseases, HIV, hepatitis, syphilis. We see reductions in that in any area where a SPRINT service program is present. And we've had one in our community. We were one of the first in the country to have a SPRINT service program. So we've been doing this for a long time. We also see reductions in needle litter, actually, in syringe service programs. So in order to get syringes from us, you have to bring us your old ones. And so it gives people a motivation to properly dispose of those. So you actually see less syringes in parks. And another key part of that program is our naloxone training. So we do have naloxone available Monday through Friday in all of our business hours. You can walk in to get it. And anyone who is either at risk of an overdose themselves or who knows someone who is. So if you've got a friend or a family member who uses narcotics, who is addicted, or if you work in a sector where you might come across folks who are overdosing, you are eligible for free naloxone through the health department. We're happy to teach you how to use it. We really want to make sure that there's naloxone out there so that we can help folks when they're in that worst time and then get them to those more supportive services down the road.
Well, Allison, I'm going to ask you one last question. It may be a loaded question. You might need a moment to think about it. But in the perfect world, what would be the three wishes you would have about mental health, about public health in an ideal world? What would your three wishes be?
Gosh. I think one of the biggest would be, as far as around public health, would be just a general understanding in our community that our health is connected, all of our health is. None of us are islands. And so the healthier our neighbors are, the healthier we can be. And the more that we realize that our health is connected to each other, the better we all will do. I think my second biggest wish would be a reduction in stigma, things like mental health disorders, substance use disorders, things like needing support when you're a new parent. The more that we could teach folks that these are normal parts of life, these are within the range of things that could happen to any of us, and that they aren't moral failings, but rather, you know, when it comes to mental health disorders or substance use disorders, that they are medical problems. That struggling with how to take care of a new kid is a normal thing. The more that we can normalize challenges and support each other through them, the only other really big ask I would have is that people know how much work goes into their having access to a healthy life and support, you know, public health interventions going forward. We all have a better shot when we have a well-supported public health system. We all have a healthier world when we do.
Dr. Allison Berry, Clallam and Jefferson County's health officer, thank you so much for joining us at program today.